CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars, Episode N. David Livingston, Dr. Space, my co-host and co-pilot. We're looking at the future, the immediate future. And we welcome Steve Wolf, the president of Beyond Earth Institute, who is part of an operation now underway to advance the ability of Earth to gain energy without greenhouse gases, without all the intricate damage done to our environment this last 100-150 years. It is called the National Strategy for Space Solar Power. I welcome Steve and mention he is the author most recently of a book that has a vision for outer space and for mankind. It is entitled The Obligation, A Journey to Discover Human Purpose on Earth and in the Cosmos. Steve, congratulations and good evening. Introduce my audience, please, to the National Strategy for Space Solar Power. What is it? How does it work? Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, John, and thank you so much for having me. This National Strategy for Space Solar Power is really the culmination of a 40-year plus, or I should say 50-year plus effort to develop what is called space-based solar power. So space-based solar power, for your listeners not familiar with it, it's the idea of, let me back up. We all know what a solar panel is that collects sun rays and converts it directly into electricity on the ground. We see that these days we see solar panels on roofs everywhere, right? This concept says, well, what if we took those solar panels and we put them in space and we collected the energy in space, sort of like the ISS, the International Space Station, does to power their facility. What if you put solar panels in space, what that allows you to do is to collect sun at an intensity that is 10 times what you can collect on Earth, and the sun is virtually available 24 hours a day. Where on Earth, the sun is only available when the sun is up, of course, right? So with this technology, as I said, it's been around for 40 years. It's the idea that we collect solar energy in space using photovoltaic technology similar to what we see on Earth. And then that electricity is then transmitted to a receiving station on Earth via a wireless power transmission, comes through the atmosphere, and is collected in very large antennas that can then collect that energy and convert it into electricity that can be transmitted directly into the local power grids. So what we're able to do is to get load-bearing quantities of electricity without using fossil fuels. And it is a tremendous way to supplement or complement Earth-based renewable energy sources. And it totally allows us to get to a net zero carbon by 2050. And we have the Beyond Earth Institute, as you mentioned, we've got a number of initiatives underway, but this one in particular, we recently communicated to Vice President Kamala Harris with our national strategy for space solar power that can be integrated into our national energy strategy for getting to that net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And it is Kamala Harris, you may know, is now the chair of the National Commission on Space. And what that means is she is the main space policy person in the entire government. So that's why we're targeting her. It's under her jurisdiction that they will consider space policy regulations of all kinds. And we want them to be considering space solar power as one of their main pillars of an initiative that she takes on in this administration.
David, you have a question for Steve.
Sure. Steve, what are the primary challenges to having space solar power functioning and operating?
Well, you know, it used to be that the cost effectiveness of doing this. So in the old days, we looked at, the solar cells weren't that efficient. The cost of getting into space was hugely expensive. And we thought we'd have to build these things using astronauts. Well, today we're looking today, the manufacturing, thanks to a large extent to terrestrial solar panels, we're able to manufacture solar panels at a much greater rate. So our ability to make them cheap, even though these are specialized solar panels. I don't want to say that they're the same solar panels. So we're able to, the manufacturing is cheaper. Getting into space, I mean, thanks to Elon Musk, right? He has already driven down the cost of getting into space by two orders of magnitude. And we are looking at the advent of his Starship vehicle that is literally going to allow us to get a pound of payload into orbit under $100 if his estimates bear out. So what that does, and then finally, it's the artificial intelligence and robotics. Those are the means by which we are going to be able to build these very large arrays on orbit. So they're too big to send up as they are. They need to be kind of constructed in space. And so now we have the means to construct these through AI and advanced robotics that are really coming online. So now we really, with just moving the needle just a little bit further, we'll be able to be competitive with this technology. We see the barriers are coming down. We understand such things as well. Let me leave it there. I mean, I know that you understand the technology, David, and you can ask me the tough questions.
Steve, a detail here: there are private investors right now. I've done this report with The Economist magazine, looking for green innovation, green ideas, and ideas that seem as far ranging as what if we eliminated meat in our diet. So your idea applies under that. Are you looking at private investors for this project, Steve? Have you had feelers from family offices or international exchanges or other governments?
I think ultimately this is going to be the government has to first step up. But ultimately these systems, these very large systems, they're not, let's face it, they're not cheap. But hey, if you wanted to build a 1 gigawatt power station, whether it's a nuclear or fire or coal fired and so forth, we're talking about multi-billion-dollar investments anyway, and it's on that order. But you can get the same kind of power with these systems. And ultimately it has to be driven by the market, by the commercial markets. And, you know, let's face it, energy is a commodity. If you can make them energy available, you have the market that's going to come to the fore. What we're suggesting is the government plays the role in demonstrating this technology and working out some of the last details that need to be developed. So that's why we're encouraging through this initiative, and I'm happy to share it with your folks. I don't know if you've actually seen this, the draft, what it is, a draft, a space policy directive that the administration could adopt. But we're looking to, as part of this directive, I should say, is to engage the commercial sector. Right. So that they're able to take take the lead on this.
David, we have less than 2 minutes. David, a quick question.
How do we get a hold of your catching the sun power strategy? Can you tell us where it is real quick?
Very easily. BeyondEarth.org. No space. BeyondEarth.org. And everything about the Beyond Earth Institute is on that site. We're very excited. Anybody who wants to get involved in this project, we are working with the greater space advocacy community. We're looking to work with the obviously with the environmental community. I would throw in that the Progressive Policy Institute, very left leaning organization, has recently come out with their own paper that's endorsing this concept as well. So it is not something for space advocates. It's really something that is going to allow us to. Allow us to get to net zero carbon, as well as helping us lay the foundation for increased space activity as well. So that's really where the Space Beyond Earth Institute is mostly interested, which is increasing human activity in space. And this is one way that helps us to leapfrog into that domain.
Stephen Wolf is the president and co-founder of the Beyond Earth Institute. He's the author of The Obligation, A Journey to Discover Human Purpose on Earth and in the Cosmos. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.